Hi, I'm Susan Lewis. I sat down with Michael Leinhard, producer and co-founder of Philadelphia Opera Collective. We talked about the power of opera and ways to engage new audiences in the art form. Can you tell me a little bit about your background? What drew you to opera?
Well, I am very fortunate. I grew up in the house of an Italian immigrant. My mother came over to America when she was about 20. And when I was a little boy, my mother and my nonna, my grandmother, brought me to see Carmen. And I was probably 3 or 4. When I came home, I kept saying, I want to be loud like them. I want to be loud like them. And now I am very, very loud. And I got my master's degree here at Temple. I studied with David Arnold, who is one of the premier baritones of the 80s and 90s. And after I graduated, Reese and I decided to found the Philadelphia Opera Collective. We founded the Opera Collective because there was a teacher, a maestro here at Temple named John Douglas. And John Douglas very, very unfortunately passed right before our master started. He had given me my first opera roles, given me my first arias. He was the person who told me, you can be an opera singer. Right before he died, I was with him in upstate New York. I was singing with an opera company. He had brought me up for the summer, and he told me, you're going to make roles for American tenors, and you're going to make opera accessible. Just don't lose that. And then he died. So one day, Reese and I were sitting around, and we were talking about this, and we were complaining, basically, about how inaccessible opera is and how, unfortunately, it seems in a lot of ways like it's going to break. And we were with a friend who just said, well, why not make it accessible? Why not just fix it? And we have been, ever since then, working in very, very small, intimate spaces, like 30, 40 seat audiences in English, and striving to make opera accessible.
So your position was that opera is struggling because people are not relating to it the way they did in the past.
I definitely think that. It used to be the most popular art form in the world. I mean, opera is a visceral expression of human emotions. When you go home and you had such a bad day that you scream into your pillow, that's opera. Or when something really great happens and you find yourself like laughing, like, this is so great, that's opera. And I think a lot of it is language barrier, and a lot of it is suspension of disbelief, and people aren't ready to do that or not willing to do that if they have to read an opera. And there's a lot of stereotypes and stigmas that hold us back. So one thing that we need to do in 2014 is help break down those barriers, help show people, no, you can relate to this. Let me show you how you can relate to this. Give me 90 minutes. That's all I need. And it's pretty great.
So you founded this group, Philadelphia Opera Collective. Is it a group or is it the two of you and you bring in different people for two productions a year, it looks like?
For the past 5 years, it has been 4 years, really. It's been Reese and myself and Brenna Geffers. And Brenna Geffers is really someone who made this very, very possible for us. She's the casting director at Igopo Classic Theater, a beautiful, beautiful theater company. And through her connections, she was able to really kickstart us. And she has a lot of know-how. She's very, very talented. And she directs our shows. And she's known for creating very edgy worlds in a theatrical space. So she actually reached out to us. We did one production, just Reese and I, and Brenna heard about what we were doing, and she reached out to us because she wanted to get involved in opera. She's very, very like-minded. So it's been the three of us, really, for a very, very long time.
You love opera. You grew up loving opera, and now you're doing opera, but you're doing it in a different way. You are focusing on the parts that you love and think are the most powerful. What do you want to put front and center, and what do you think is not as important?
What I think is most important is drama. And I'm paraphrasing this. Someone approached Plácido Domingo, one of the most famous tenors probably to ever live, and he was singing Rigoletto, which is a baritone role. And they asked him, you know, people are not going to like this. You're not a baritone. And he said, my voice isn't perfect, but opera is drama, and drama is not perfect. And I love that. I love that concept. Opera is drama. It's a story. And the singing will always be there. The music will always be there. But the first thing that you have to latch on to as a non-opera singer is the story, it's the characters. It is having someone look you in the eye and tell you something and realize there's a trust, there's a connection there. So when an opera singer makes contact with you, it's very, very special. And we work in very, very small spaces so that it is possible. Again, 35, 40 seat audiences. Opera singers are within arm's reach. And we work in English. We work in the vernacular. The last 2 years, we've written our own operas. So we have really worked in the vernacular. Poulenc, for instance, who a very famous French opera composer, in the beginnings of some of his scores, he would even write, wherever this opera is performed, perform it in the vernacular of that country or state or city. And we do that. So we're trying to make it accessible by reaching people on their level and then hopefully raising them up so we can meet together in the operatic level. To that end, this year, half of our cast are musical theater singers. So we have half opera singers and half musical theater singers. And it's really unconventional, but the average person will hear these singers and they'll say, oh yeah, that's great. I'm okay with this. And then they'll hear the opera singers and I feel like it'll jar them at first, but then it'll just sort of sink into their skin and they'll realize, oh, this is just a different way of using your instrument. And hopefully they'll come back then.
So what's the difference between them in your mind?
Well, musical theater singers are devoted simply to telling stories. Their voices are beautiful, don't get me wrong, but their focus is telling a story. A lot of times, opera singers, especially very, very young opera singers, their entire focus is just singing. To have someone whose entire focus is telling the story next to someone who is trying to learn how to latch on to that is really quite lovely. And I believe that we'll be able to help each other. So having a musical theater singer who's drama-driven and having an opera singer who's music-driven, eventually we'll meet in the middle.
You're driven to engage audiences with the power and the drama of the stories of opera. The opera Macabre, a new opera created last year, was somewhat of an example of that.
So we at the Philadelphia Opera Collective are focused on making opera accessible by defining it on our terms, by taking edgy and visceral worlds that opera creates by itself and showing everybody that opera is not just for really, really rich people in tuxes. So Opera Macabre was a perfect example of that because Edgar Allan Poe's life already was so operatic and his stories are all narrative driven. Usually they are from the point of view of a narrator, and he will a lot of times put himself into these characters that are completely unhinged.
Why do the works all seem kind of dark and edgy?
Well, it's something that just speaks to us as a production team more. We are more interested in that literature, in that facet of human emotion. And it's something that we ourselves oftentimes feel that we need to explore. We are trying to bring in new audience members as well as surprise aficionados in the opera world. But at the same time, we do want to challenge them a little bit. So obviously, we don't want to make them uncomfortable, but we sort of do, you know. We want people to confront these facets of human emotion, and we think that opera is the perfect way to do it.
So talk a little bit about this production, By You That Made Me Frankenstein.
By You That Made Me Frankenstein. We are so excited about it. In 1816, a volcano had exploded, and it was called The Year Without a Summer. So in like New England in July, it was snowing and a lot of people had to escape. They felt like they had to escape to get to someplace that would be warmer. Mary Shelley eloped with the still married Percy Bysshe Shelley and they moved to Geneva and they stayed with Lord Byron, his lover, John Polidori, and their sister-in-law, Claire Claremont, who incidentally was pregnant with Lord Byron's bastard child. And they lived in this house trapped by terrible weather. It's the year without a summer. And they sort of went stir crazy. They had a little bit of cabin fever. So they would exchange partners often. They would get drunk every night. Presumably, they smoked a lot of opium, and this would get old after a few months. So one night, and this is where our opera opens up, one night they decided to read the Phantasmagoriana, which are the tales of the dead from antiquity. They read these stories, and Lord Byron, basically, who was the leader of the group, said, "We can do better than this. We can write better stories than this. We are some of the most brilliant minds in the world." So they had a ghost story competition. And from that ghost story competition, Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein. John Polidori, Lord Byron's lover, wrote Vampire, which is the first vampire story ever written. Our story explores the concept that we as humans all create our own monsters in our lives, and we oftentimes become other people's monsters. The opera is an exploration of the darker side of society that we create, that all of us take part in to a certain extent, however minimal.
And the setting is kind of cool too.
Oh, the setting is magnificent. The Franklin Inn Club is Philadelphia's oldest private writers club. We're in their parlor. So you'll be listening to Lord Byron propose this ghost story competition that created two of the greatest works of literature ever. And you'll be sitting in squashy armchairs. You'll be sipping on wine or beer, and you'll be in front of a mantelpiece with a fireplace, surrounded by books. You will feel like you have been transported into Lord Byron's parlor in Geneva. It will take you out of yourself.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Everything you hear on WRTI is made possible by members. Please join today.